thoughts and stuff, and we'll work on it.
So you're going to send something to Shanna, is that correct?
I will. Actually, I'm on my way to Galena, but I will contact Linda to remind her to send something right now.
Thank you.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Energy conservation presentation. Come on up.
Good to see you guys. Hope I'm a familiar face. Rick Nicholson, I'm your EPM rep. Thanks for being our customer. Ben and I have been doing some ciphering. Ben is the president of our company. And I've only been with him 19 years, so what's that tell you? But he's got some stuff he wants to share with you about this building, and we've done a little research on some of your replacements. So you guys have got my card. Ben will give you his. I don't know if you turn on. Good to see you.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Thank you.
I'll go ahead and give you Ben's handout also. Okay. All right, thanks. Okay, Ben.
The microphones out there at the table. We can bring a podium over if you'd like to stand, or you can have a seat, whatever you'd like
to. Is that recording is what you're doing?
Yes.
Okay. I was going to say you won't have a problem hearing me, but the recording might.
Do you want us to bring the
I said you want us to bring the podium over?
Ma'am?
If you wanted to stand, would you like for us to bring the podium over?
No, that's all right. I'll be fine right here.
Okay.
My name's Ben Trout. Nobody's ever had a problem hearing me. I retired from Marine Corps in 1969. I was enlisted for 6 years, and I was a drill instructor during part of that time. And later on, I was commissioned. But anyway, I was an electrical engineer when I went back into Marine Corps, and I was standing in front of a selection officer. After a year's worth of infantry training, every Marine officer has infantry training. And he looked at my qualification record, and he said, well, I see you're an electrical engineer. And I said, yes, sir. I graduated from MU. And he said, well, we don't have those in the Marine Corps. If you'd like to go in the Navy, we can arrange that. And I said, no, thank you, sir. I don't want to go in the Navy. I hope you weren't in the Navy and aren't offended.
I'm a Navy guy.
See ya.
Anyway, I kind of had a little reservation of setting in a hunk of steel and getting shot at with a 16-inch gun. So anyway, he said, well, you'll make a good infantry officer, which is what I did. But anyway, I got out and refreshed the degree up in 69, and I went with this company, and I've been with it ever since. Obviously, I'm... shall we say, elderly, and my replacement sits in my office next to me, so I'm already taken care of. I tried retiring twice, couldn't stand it, so I'm back. I'm still here. We did your courthouse over there and the Justice Center. We did that about 6 years ago. You've had very minor problems over there. There are no maintenance contracts for our system. We try not to sell it to anybody who's not going to take care of it. Because if you have a maintenance contract, you tend to not take care of it and depend upon the vendor to do it, and it gets very expensive then. So we've had hundreds of systems that are installed throughout the Midwest, and there's not a single maintenance contract on it. Your average cost of taking care of that system after your warranty was over was less than 0.5% of what you paid for it. So there's no need to have a maintenance contract. And your people have done real well taking care of it. The only change to that building that you had was when we put it in, you had some areas that were turned off when they weren't occupied. Not a lot. You can't do a lot in the jail. And that was mainly your courthouse area. About 2 years ago, you decided that you wanted to leave the courthouse occupied all the time in case somebody came in and wanted to work in it after hours. The savings and utility costs that you had prior to that was a little over 29%. That's about what our average is. When you eliminated the night setback in those areas, it dropped to 27%. So it only cost you about 2% of your utility costs to eliminate the night setback. Our system's unique compared to other people's. Our system obtains the majority of its savings, if not all of it, from ensuring that your mechanical equipment is operating efficiently. The monitoring portion of the system monitors actually the efficiency of the operation and the proper operation of all the equipment in the building. If it decides that it's not operating or detects that it's not operating properly, you get an alarm. If you don't answer the alarm within about 15 minutes, we get the alarm. Now, the only alarms that occur after hours and on weekends are those alarms that are serious. For example, a rooftop unit that's heating the jail that no longer heats. That's worthy of a call at about midnight to make sure it gets up. So the bulk of the savings comes from the EPM system, from actually the mechanical equipment that you have and ensuring that it's operating as it should have operated when it was put in. That building was about 5 or 6 years old when we got there. Had some minor issues that were affecting the operation, but major issues when it affected energy. Took your people about 6 months to correct those, and it's been running fine ever since then. And that's the bottom line. We are a computerized temperature control system. We're not a direct digital control system. Back about 30 years ago, Honeywell, Johnson, little old EPM were manufacturing and installing computerized temperature control systems. It took custom software. You could not take a piece of software and put it in a building. You had to write the software. The software had to be written in assembler language because it had to act quickly and control equipment. And about probably 1989 and 1999, Honeywell and Johnson, who were the big manufacturers of it, decided they weren't going to do that any longer. They were going to convert over to what's called the direct digital control system. The direct digital control system, the difference between the two is that it does nothing more than a night setback thermostat that you'd buy at Walmart. But what it does do is it allows you to look at it and see it run, and it allows you to build a history of it running. But as far as the energy programs or efficiency, you could buy it at Walmart and do the same thing. And that's a reason why our savings is so high when we take them out. You had a direct digital control system that was 6 years old in that building that we removed and threw in the Dempsey dumpster. And we installed our system directly controlling the equipment and monitoring it. And that's where the 29% savings came from. So we're different. The other thing we don't do is we do what's called a feasibility study before we even offer to do the engineering. And the reason why we do this is that, two, if your building can't be controlled, we need to know before we spend a lot of money doing a proposal for you. And the engineering. And the second reason is if you're a new customer, we need to see whether or not you're going to be a good new customer. If you aren't going to take care of the equipment, we don't want to install it. We have a serviceman out of the Wichita office that takes care of Oklahoma, Colorado, Kansas. We have a serviceman out of Fulton that takes care of Arkansas, Missouri, Iowa, Illinois. We don't have any other service people. The system troubleshoots itself. If something's wrong, it will tell you. We simply ask you to call us to verify it. You have a spare parts kit, you go replace the part. And when the part, and you send the old part back to us, we fix it, send it back to you. And that's the reason why your maintenance cost is so low and why the dependability of our systems are low enough. This is the same type of feasibility study that was done on your building 7 years ago over at the jail. And what it does is it takes into consider the type of building, the energy use, the energy profile, and the type of weather it experienced during the base year period, and the type of equipment we're controlling. We were familiar with this building because this actually was the building we did the first analysis on, because we didn't think you'd want to replace this 60-year-old system. We looked at the building. The commission asked us to look at that building. We looked at that building. They chose that building. And the reason why they did at that time, they were trying to make the decision whether or not they were going to tear this building down and build a new building. Now, it's still here, so I'm back. I'm kind of moving. I have a German wife born in Berlin, and she hates Arnold Schwarzenegger. I don't know why. But I always like to tell her that when I'm going to go someplace, I say, I'll be back. So I'm back. Anyway, the bottom line here is we run the estimates of the savings based upon a worst-case analysis. We do three analyses on this before we do it and on your engineering. The first analysis is we look at the Department of Energy records, and we determine based on the type building you have, the age of building, the type heating and air and its use, what they say you ought to be using as energy. Then the other thing we do is we look on a history of what we've done on this kind of building. We pick out the worst one we've done and had problems with, and that's our database level. And then finally, we look at your square foot energy costs compared to other buildings on the same utility rate that you're on. When we did this one, and I'm sorry, I have to wear glasses now, so let me get my... I can't see without these. What's bad is I went to three optometrists to get glasses. Every one of them I had headaches with. I went to Dollar General, and it works good. It has for years. So anyway, here we go. If you look at this column, the facility size is 27,000 up here in the right-hand corner, 880 square feet. Now what that is, that's the equivalent energy use size if this building was a single-story flat building. It's not obviously, and you count the floors differently because the only heat loss or heat gain, for example, you have on this floor is what comes through the walls. You're insulated by the top and by the bottom, and the second floor has to deal with the roof. So there are various factors you put in there. So that's not going to be your exact square footage generally. We looked at the period October of 16 through September of 17. Those were the bills. I'm sorry, let me get back over here. Those are the bills that we looked at. And if you look at the first column, month one is in 17. And you go down to month, anyway, it's part of it 17 and part of it 16, whichever is the most current. The degree days are the actual heating and cooling degree days you had during that same period. A degree day is the difference of the average daily temperature from 65 degrees. That means today, for example, you had about a 25 degree low. You're going to have about a 35, 40 degree high. Your average is going to be somewhere around 30, say. So you take 30 from 65, that's 35, it's heating degree days. You add all those up, and that's what the degree days are. We can't do this part the way we want to do it. It has to be done based on Department of Energy rules. The kilowatts, that's how much electricity you use in a peak 15-minute period. They measure your electricity, Empire does, and every 15 minutes, they measure how much you use, and they do that 24/7 for the billing period. You're billed based upon the highest 15-minute period during that 30 days, as if you used it every 15 minutes of every day. Now, you have a minimum you have to pay, And if you drop below that minimum, then that's your billing for the